At the third stroke, it will be...
Hello, beautiful people, and welcome to the second edition of the EUC Digest Throwdown, a monthly recording with the entire podcast crew, in which we will discuss and debate on the news of the past month in the EUC space. My name is Ingmar Verheij, and for this episode, I'm your host. And if you haven't seen or listened to the previous episode, then you have missed out on our how we discussed on the leadership changes in VMware at Microsoft, Citrix acquiring Reich, Salesforce acquiring Slack, and did Microsoft screw over the market with WVD, and Johan doing a review on a bottle of Chardonnay. Talking about wine, liquid, let us highlight our sponsor, Liquidware. Jits, can you tell us a bit about Liquidware?
Yes, for sure. First of all, thank you, Liquidware, for sponsoring the EUC Digest podcasts. But talking about Liquidware, Liquidware provides adaptive workspace management solutions for all Windows desktops. And the company products encompass all facets of management to ensure the ultimate user experience across all the workloads, whether that's physical, virtual, desktop as a service, or in any cloud. So that's your Liquidware. Check it out.
All right. Well, while we're on the topic of Liquidware, it's February. I've completed my dry January, and I've got myself an excellent bottle of Nero Passo, which I will enjoy throughout the show, so we can share notes at the end. And obviously, I'd rather empty this bottle with my friends, but we're still remote. So I'm happy to see all my friends on the screen as, well, the next best thing. Guys, how are you doing?
Doing great, thanks. Awesome. Is this the part where we need to introduce ourselves? Because
you go first, Erik.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. No. So my name is Erik van Klaveren, and I'm not your host for today's episode. But I'm your co-host, and I love to be in the air again after a full month of not drinking with you guys.
Looking forward to hearing your thoughts. Yes.
Yes, I'm not obsessed with any drinks whatsoever, but I'm happy to be on the show again, and I'm more obsessed on being on the show. So great to be here again.
With drinks, you bloody.
Cheers.
And then
cheers, Jits. Here's Kees Bocheman. Like Jits, I'm really happy to be here again. I've been looking forward to this episode of the Throwdown. Been recovering from COVID, so I'm just happy to see you guys. Except for Johan, obviously, but Johan, you can introduce yourself now.
Thanks, man. Well, this time Johan here. This time with a cap. Because I haven't seen a barber in the last 4 weeks, and that all probably won't happen in the next, I don't know, 12 weeks either. So my wife is gonna give me a haircut tomorrow, and I'm actually looking forward to that.
Hey, but there is you can go to the barber shop first
in Germany.
March, in Germany,
in
yeah.
Germany,
and you
yeah,
can,
yeah, yeah,
yeah. You can go across the border the region next to the Netherlands.
I just saw
you.
I've lived the farthest from the German border of everyone in the whole Netherlands.
So that's still 1.5 hours, right? I mean,
yeah, sure.
Still, yeah. I mean, I think the cap looks great on you, so it's good that you know that works for you. I haven't been at a haircut. I actually did a mat recently, 100 days ago. I'm really looking forward to getting on a haircut. But I mean, Case.
So are we, Ingmar?
Excellent. Yeah. Case, I'm so glad to see you here. Back on your feet.
I remember coming on the show. Case mentioned, why do you have that Kurt Cobain coupe?
Yeah. On the showcase.
Which one? Yeah. I haven't seen it, Eric. What?
can you show us, please, Eric?
Maybe later.
But talking about haircuts and talking about Case, I do remember some videos in the first lockdown, or maybe, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 months ago, where actually your son was doing your hair in the back garden, right?
That's correct. So that's a funny story. So my wife did the same thing. So she took a razor and shaved my son's head, just a few millimeters of hair. And then I said, well, you can do my hair as well, which she did. And then I asked her to do it again, but a little bit shorter. And my son was handing the clippers, and he gave her the wrong clipper, and it went like 2 or 3 millimeters instead of the length that I asked for. So, you know, I'm just
sounds
saying,
like
Johan, when your wife does your hair, make sure she uses the right clippers.
Yeah, that's one of her recommendations too. Yeah.
Lessons learned.
Dude, I have a backup plan, right? So I can go bald.
Yeah. Sure. Just wear a cap.
Or wear a cap like this one.
Yeah.
It's a good cap.
So it's an interesting question, though. Would you rather lose the hair on top of your head or on your chin?
Ooh. Don't go any lower.
Top of my head. Top of your beard is holy, dude.
Hey, guys. What? Maybe
I shaved mine, and the wife wasn't.
Eric. All right.
So, quick question, Ingmar.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Did I tune in on the EUC Digest podcast?
Yeah. Well, I mean...
This is the hipster podcast.
Hipster podcast.
This is the five stages of beard.
No. But so far, it's end user podcast, and I'm missing out on the computer part.
Well, and it's maybe EUC's end user community instead of end user computing, because I would say, you know, this is basically the period where the yearly recurring events happen. The events where not only the vendors share their news and, you know, we can get our knowledge and insight from peers, it's also the place where we get to reconnect with peer community friends like you. So I dearly miss it. And, you know, last year, many vendors either had to cancel their event or they diverted to virtual events. And, you know, this year we saw Citrix change their summit conference to a field kickoff that was virtually in January. And actually, maybe Eric can share a bit on that because he was actually an attendee. I heard great stories because it wasn't. I was not. No. It wasn't like, hey, let's make it the physical event virtual and do it all in 1 or 2 days. It was spread across 2 weeks and you know, short. So I kind of liked it. But anyhow, VMware also announced all their events will be virtual this year. We know that Microsoft did. How realistic is it to expect a physical event where we can see each other again? And just have one thing I saw passing by, I think in the weekend, MIT Technology Review, they covered a Silicon Valley story from a super spreader event hosted by Peter Diamandis. I didn't know him before, but his theory was that by creating a immunity bubble for a small group in a TV studio setting, with very, very frequent PCR tests, people would be safe. Right? So they did a PCR test before and during the event over and over and over again. Turns out he was wrong. He shared a blog post where he said he was humbled and pained by what he has learned. Despite doing over 450 tests, having 4 physicians on site, over 25% tested positive in the day after, including himself. And he learned from his mistakes. He said, there are only 3 options: masks, vaccines, and physical distance.
Yeah, so is that really so?
I would say
caps.
I don't expect any events, physical events in 2021.
No.
But did you register for Mobile World Congress in Barcelona yet?
Not yet. Why?
No, they're planning
50,000 people.
Yeah. Well, the Grand Fia. Well, you can do that.
Let's get back to the part where he tested all the stuff. So, can we rely on those tests? Because if those tests are technically 100% accurate, then it isn't possible to have such a spreader.
Apparently, I'm not a test expert nor a virologist or whatever. Maybe vinologist, but we'll come back to that later when we talk about liquids. I don't know. But apparently he has 4 physicians. He has like all the medical staff. He apparently has quite a bit of money. So he invested in so many things and arranged things. Apparently still did not succeed in the plans that he had. And he was really convinced that because at that point in it was around LA or San Francisco, I'm not sure, it was prohibited. It was illegal. So he needed to convince quite a lot of people in doing so. So just as, you know, as an FYI, this happened. And as a result, I'm kind of disappointed that we will not have a physical conference, which makes me in a way sad because I mean, to me, going to a conference is seeing people like you and others and catching up. And I mean, I can get knowledge or get updates from vendors from behind the screen, but that's not why I go to a conference. So what are your thoughts on conferences?
Dude, I missed the stage. I missed the physical stage, being on the
Everybody
stage.
Everybody does, right?
I did, I think, like, I don't know, 30 to 40 physical stages in 2019. And I started a tour, a VMUG tour in the eastern part of Europe early last year. and that was obviously canceled. While I was in the, I think I was in Poland or in Bulgaria or something. So I had to fly back, and that was it. That was the last time I was on a physical stage. I'm strongly passionate about presenting on a stage and inspiring people. And you can, you know, you can do all the Zooming and webinars and have all the expensive video equipment and video switchers you can have, but it's not the same feeling.
Mm-hmm. No,
and it never will be.
I think there's a distinct to be made between kind of attending a conference as a and I air quote regular attendee, where you get the energy from the presenters and from the people there, from the employees, from sponsors and whatnot, versus what you're describing, Johan. So I get your point. I'm 100% the same, right? So when I present, I get energy from the people I'm presenting to. But then again, there's also a big chunk of people who are there just for the networking, just for for the sake of being there, because they can actually attend these sessions with experts like yourself or Eric or Yitz or Ingmar and see my pretty smile.
But you can recreate the vibe that's going on over there, whether if you're someone who does a session or an attendee. There is something about live conferences in the 3D world.
And it's about the energy, exactly as Case mentioned.
You can't create that virtually or artificially.
I mean, it's
different.
It's different for sure. And I wouldn't say it's bad. There are good virtual conferences, depending on your expectations. But mm-hmm. I mean, in the early days, I went to a conference to learn about vendor updates and tech sessions. But now, the last years, it's more about meeting the people and just catching up, or even with the vendor, the booths. All the interactions you have there, the learnings you do, are usually just informal, or the networks, the connections you make. And whenever you are behind the screen, that does not happen. I mean, it's not like you go through a chat pane and say like, hey, Case, I saw you respond. I'm going to connect with you one-on-one and let's have an excellent conversation on the side. That never happens. That doesn't exist.
Well, then again, I have a few colleagues working more into the virtual reality or extended reality space, of course. And even last year, there were some virtual conferences where you would attend with your HMD, with your VR headset, and you were walking to a venue. You encounter real people, but well, the flip side of course is that you see an avatar walking around. But at least he explained that this was like, well, it's close to a physical experience in a real world at a real world venue, of course. But at least he came to situations where he walked up to people and just started a conversation. So at least the spontaneous connecting with people, or maybe already existing people in your network, that can be there more or less achieved with such a concept.
But the real never go to that.
No, definitely. I mean, and I think we can all agree on that. But at least what I think now, we see a lot of new technologies being developed. And even I joked about Mobile World Congress, right? But at least they're investigating how can we also in the future, maybe, well, 2022 or something, or even beyond, how can we create a touchless environment? How can we make sure that everyone can safely register and get a attendee badge, etc.? So there is a lot of development now in how, well, the face-to-face, the physical conferences will be in the future, right? So that's one of the good.
There was an article published
I'm looking forward. I'm looking forward to getting back to a physical conference. So if that helps, I mean, I know Mobile World Congress as the biggest conference by far that is in the EUC space for me. So 100,000 attendees the past years, not last year because they had to cancel too. 100,000. If you say, I heard you say 50,000, that's still, I mean, I think that's unbelievable. Then again, if they do the work and it helps, even if it's for next year, I'm away. I'll even buy a ticket, even though I'm not planning on going because I think it's too high of a risk. But I'm looking forward on seeing you guys again.
Two things.
I'm wondering what. So Mobile World Congress is being announced as a physical event. I think in May or June.
In June.
So Mobile World Congress is sponsored by the world's major EUC companies and hardware companies and phone companies. Those companies will have a hard time getting people over to Barcelona to, you know, and even sponsor an event like this. So I have it could happen, but I'm wondering what companies would take the risk of sponsoring an event like this and sending people over and hoping for attendees to be there as well.
I think it's a fair point, right? I mean, who wants to associate himself to a conference that served as a super spreader? Not saying that they're not doing all their due diligence to make this, to prevent this, but what if it's not a success, right? You have to expect that this is an experiment, so you have a chance of success and a chance of failure. What if it's a failure? What if you are, like, you associated your brand, which is the thing?
Yeah. A step back to the first part. You did the intro on the guy who was testing a lot. No, not to take a step back, Ingmar, because we won't hear you.
Oh, sorry.
And I have to do a lot of audio editing with volumes and stuff. two things. On the Mobile Congress or on the part where the guy did a lot of PCR tests, a lot of things to be sure this couldn't be spread. We're actually doing the same in Holland now, right? With events which are managed with 500 people.
Yeah, stupid.
I don't know. I don't know if it's stupid.
I agree.
Stupid
as fuck.
You were not invited, right?
I saw this on Monday on television, right?
Yeah.
Jinek, local television. Hey, we're doing this, like, unique world first test on getting people. We're doing testing before, yada, yada, yada. And by the way, the same people who were doing that test, sitting at a table or being at a conference, they were sitting at a table at a TV station. What the fuck? I mean, I was just reading on how that's epically failed in the West Coast. Mm-hmm. And then you're doing a test and you're assuming, not that you're failing and taking precautions. No, let's assume we will be all right. Everything is a success. I'm going to sit at a table with the potential of infecting others. I'm sorry, but I think that's just plain stupid.
Oh, that's the same as jumping out of an airplane with a parachute, without a parachute, and 1 meter above the ground. Well, so far, so good.
I succeeded 99%, so you could say that was successful.
Yeah, that's the number I can kind of live with.
But well, secondly, we...
Oh, sorry, yeah.
At the university in Rotterdam, Erasmus University, they invented those nose sprays, which have a protection for 24 hours. Almost 100% guaranteed. This really puts stuff into perspective.
So 99% guaranteed that the parachute will...
covered in 99%.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Just laying.
I know. But this really puts stuff into perspective. If you could do those conferences, and this is like 99.9999% coverage. This will fix.
Dude, honestly, it's just MacGyvering yourself through the COVID period. It's just that. COVID is not gone, and it won't be gone in 2021.
No, but it won't be gone in 2025. It will always be there and be there to stay until we find a way to cope with it, like we did with the rest of all those diseases and pandemics.
Yeah, that big international events will, until that moment is there, that COVID is out of the system. It'll mean that big international physical conferences won't be organized anymore.
Yeah, and I think we need to wrap up this topic before this turns into a COVID conference. we're not virologists, and we're not going to change or improve this. Again, conferences to me is community, end user community. We just saw a couple of blog posts where new EUC community friends were announced. We saw VXpert being announced from VMware, so 2021 class of VMware VXperts. Citrix announced their new class. Big class of VXperts, yeah. CTA, CTPs, and I'm sorry, Johan, maybe you can allude a little bit on that later on VXperts. I did see CTAs 15 added, and CTPs, I saw two new Belgiums being added. And maybe I'm wrong. I've never seen a CTB from Belgium. So kudos, nope. Respect, guys. I'm so glad there's finally a
hold
Belgium.
Hold on. Danny van Dam.
Is he?
He's a little bit of a gray area, isn't he?
Yeah, well, he lives in Belgium, right?
No, but, most Belgians will say he was not officially. So
let's not make it a person thing. So we had a lot of Dutch CTPs. We just added two more. So that's again, I think Dutch are doing great in the industry by far. Danny, so I would say one foot in, one foot out. I don't know. I'm not sure if he's Dutch or Belgium. Either way, adding to Belgium, I think that's excellent. Also, two from Germany and two from the US. So put it in perspective, six from Europe. Two from the US, one from Australia. So I think just Europe is doing awesome. Obviously, the Dutch are heavily represented. Not sure why, but apparently we have a strong voice and a strong opinion.
By the guess way, we're opinionated. Yeah. Who would have guessed?
No. Wouldn't it say that's always it?
No, just one man's opinion, right?
Yeah.
No. But it's not just tied to the, in this case, to the Citrix communities. It's also tied to the Nutanix communities, to the VMware communities. If you look at the, look at the VMware, let's say top 10 bloggers globally, Duncan Epping and Frank Denneman are always in the top 10. And it amazes me. I don't know. Would it be like the ingenuity of the Dutch people that would?
So if you don't mind, there's that. There's an excellent book around this called The Culture Map. It's written by Aaron Meyer, and it tells you about how people are kind of perceiving certain social interactions with each other. And it does that based on a culture map based on country. And it's a very interesting book. If you have the time, and I know this is not a kind of a book podcast, but if you have the time and
we could do a book podcast. Get it.
It's definitely something that, that has helped me.
shameless
that's
plugging.
A shameless plug. Yeah. There you go. But this one,
Jets isn't showing any books, so that probably says enough.
Listeners, I mean, obviously we're doing a video cast on YouTube, but some people listen to podcasts. We were showing books to each other, like, hey, these are awesome books, and I have a bunch of them that I want to read, but I gotta admit here, I don't read enough, so these are mostly unread books. But I like the recommendation, guys, because culture, especially in working for a global company that operates, you know, across the border, you'll face different cultures, different people, and it's good knowing your limitations. So you're not answering your question, but acknowledging that I think the Dutch culture has a pro being outspoken. Okay, yeah, on top, sell with a story. Good. Thanks, guys. We've seen enough. I think the Dutch are outspoken, and that's good. And I also think that the Dutch are sometimes a bit too outspoken. We are very strong opinionated, and that's great having an opinion. You don't have to share it. Not always, right? There's a saying when they ask a German to say jump, they will say jawohl. And when you say ask a Dutch people to jump, they say why?
Because spring is in the air.
Because spring is in the air. There you go. So, congratulations on everyone in the community.
I think it's very interesting to say that. Definitely.
Round of applause.
For all just the new.
Mar, it's interesting to say that that although you have an opinion, you don't always have to voice it. We're with five Dutch guys on a podcast, and a podcast is just the way to voice your opinion, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying
but there's a reason why this isn't live.
Yeah,
we should do that one time.
Yeah,
people don't have the time.
But I figured out because the link Ingmar initially shared, we could have viewers in this because I was attending as a viewer.
Yeah, yeah. No, oh, I mean, dude, we can do.
We
live.
Should do that one time.
That will really be fun.
Let's mature first. I mean, guys, we should have a strong opinion and we should share it. Then again,
that
I
will
know...
never happen. Mature first, dude. Sorry,
no.
Okay, let's just wrap this up. Let's say congratulations, everyone. I think yes. It's excellent having everyone in the community. One last topic.
One serious note about the community programs. The thing that still amazes me, and I don't think honestly don't think if that's a positive or negative thing, is that there are over 2,000 or just nearly 2,000 VXperts. And I'm wondering I know what the value is because it's a marketing-led program from VMware. And they do give you like free licenses and stuff like that. But I'm wondering, and we should dedicate maybe a future podcast around this. So what should a community program, like an ideal program, look like?
I would love to have that session. Yeah.
That's a good topic. That's a good topic. Excellent. Yeah, because I was almost about to shamelessly plug the NVIDIA GPU Community Advisor Program, which is the complete opposite, right? When you're talking about the quantity, about quality, but quantity. So 25 members max against the...
And then again, we should talk about quality of that program as well.
How many of them are on this call yet, actually, today?
I count one previous member and two existing.
Well.
Yeah. I can count myself in as a previous member as well. And two existing members, but we are about to announce the members for the upcoming 12 months. So,
nice. So 2021, the class of...
NGCAs.
Yeah, experts. NGCAs.
Yes.
Well, looking forward to that. I mean,
will be announced pretty soon.
We can do a separate recording on just on community programs because, Johan, you said, what's the value of the program? I think there are at least two perspectives. What's the value for the vendor? And I had a call with Case on this this week. What's the value and the purpose of the program for the vendor? And what's the value and the purpose for the community participant, right? So what if you are a VXpert? What if you are a CTP? What do you get? What do you expect? And there are so many things that you can have an opinion on. Again, I think that's excellent. And I'd love to have more conversations on that.
I think what the VXpert program actually did was divide those as well. And you initially need to be in VXpert before you can go into like a core program.
The sub-programs. Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, but that was introduced 1 or 2 years ago. I'm not really sure, but there are some smudges on your glass, Johan. I don't know, but talking about community, and I do not want to hijack this, Mr. Host, but talking about community, sometimes there is a reach out to the community as well, right? And not only by the EUC Digest, because we're always reaching out to the community and, reach out to us. Podcast at euc-digest.com with any topics or any suggestions or any feedback, feel free. But we have a different reach out today as well, right?
What? Because I was expecting you to do this.
Yeah. I didn't want to hijack it. But
you already did, but that's fine. Thank you. Thank you for paving the way for this not a great topic, which is around. Which
great
comes from
segue.
The community. Great segue. Thank you. I did not see that coming. VDI, like a pro. Johan, we're not going to ask you if this is the year of VDI, so please do not answer the question. VDI Like a Pro, it's a yearly recurring, independently and community-run survey. It's like a state of union. The goal of the survey is to get a clear view on how EUC technologies are used in the field, how EUC adoption is changing, and what to expect in the future. So basically, this is a call out. If you haven't done already, it takes 10 to 15 minutes out of your calendar. Please participate because it's not only helping them, right? They can run a great survey and do some statistics, some numbers. It helps you, right? So it helps you and everyone. Pretty sure that the vendors are looking at it as well. So yeah, critical audience.
Yeah, it defines 90% of the roadmap, right? Oh no.
At NVIDIA, that's good to hear.
No.
So what you're saying is that, okay.
I think we especially have to emphasize that it's not only about VDI.
Is it EUC states, in general?
EUC in general, although it states VDI Like a Pro.
Yeah.
So one thing I'll
why did
one
they call
thing
it VDI Like a Pro?
Amar, one moment of your time right now. Just take a sip of your drink. But one thing that I think we need to call out is the great work from Mark Rubin and Christian in the VDI Like a Pro survey, because those guys are driving this and they're doing such a great job in kind of gathering the the details, the surveys, and actually presenting that back to the community as well. So kudos to them.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, guys. I mean, appreciate it.
It's really just a small addition to that. It's really, really helpful information that they get out of the survey. And I took two of those surveys or two of those results of 2 years and to study, you know, and I used some of the data for my my first book. Just because they get you some insights on topics, you know, you never thought, like, I don't know, certain directions or certain use of solutions or relations between, for instance, a hypervisor and like a broker or stuff like that. I found it really, really interesting and yeah, sometimes surprising. So we definitely recommend everyone filling it in and hopefully see some results soon.
Yeah, and then you can really use their information as well, as long as you just highlight that you got it from the survey, which brings them value.
I always mention, I mean, whenever you share a statistic, mention the source, that makes it way more credible. And yet what you said on roadmaps, I cannot say that it happens, but I will definitely tell you that it does happen, right? That surveys or statistics from around the globe, even when it's independently run, it's anecdotal evidence, right? Even when you do not do your own survey, right, you still see a survey and feel like, hey, okay, so there's this survey. They had a certain group of participants. There must be some value in that. There must be some fruit in there. And maybe you're going to run your own survey to validate this, right?
Yeah.
But absolutely. This is being definitely used across the globe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a valuable data point.
Yes,
definitely,
for sure. Yeah. So, and that's also to the audience, if you do not fill this out, if you do not get your information in there, then maybe you're still influencing the direction of products and implementations whatsoever because you're not filling it out. So basically what I'm saying, if you don't do it, you're an asshole. No, that's not true. That's a bit silly.
Well, let's make it a positive note, Ingmar. If you do fill it in and support the community, you have the opportunity for an exclusive Dutch stroopwafel arrangement and potentially an Amazon gift card of $25. So that might be an interesting motivation or extra motivation.
Cool. That is excellent.
Yeah.
All right.
So
then
we had other topics to discuss as well, right?
Yeah.
I just wanted to switch gears into another topic, which is around Salesforce. We mentioned Salesforce in a previous call. That was around their acquisition of Slack. But this time, they're differently in the news. Salesforce says the 9-to-5 workday is dead, and they will allow their employees to choose one of the three categories that dictates how often, if ever, they return to the office if it's safe to do so. They have a flex offering, which means you'll probably come into the office 1 or 3 days a week, typically just for, you know, things like team collaboration, meetings, presentations, whatsoever. Or you are fully remote, which I can relate to because I'm never in the office. Very rare situations when we have a drink or when I want to go for lunch with people. So you have a fully remote worker or you have someone who is office-based. So this will probably, at Salesforce, be the smallest population of their workforce. And I think that's great, right? I think it's great that Salesforce says it's the end of the 9-to-5 workday. That's one, but also giving employees choice of where to work. And Salesforce is not the only one. Facebook said the same thing. Microsoft said the same thing. We saw Dropbox do the same. Actually, maybe this is less positive, but Dropbox let over 10% of the people, they had to let them go, despite saying earlier that no one would get fired. But that's basically because their offices are nearly empty. So those who are physically associated with work in the office, they're being let go and will probably get rehired in some other way. So what do you think will happen in the future from 1 to 3 years out, right? So not right now. Now we're in the middle of the pandemic. I think we've talked enough about COVID and pandemic. What do you think 1 to 3 years out, what will this do with just, let's say, your customers, the people around you, but also with the vendors? What is this going to mean?
Let's get back. You have to choose between those three categories.
That's Salesforce, yes.
Okay.
Well, you have to choose. I don't work at Salesforce, right? But at least these are the three main categories or buckets where you can choose from, right? So, yeah, but it's all very hybrid, right?
If you're wise, you would choose Flex.
Yeah, well, I don't know. That depends on your situation. That depends on how you're organized at home, your job exactly, your day. I think the more important question here is also related to the different verticals, right? I mean, we're all working in the IT industry, as just to generalize this, and the majority of the time, as many of the vendors already called out a couple of years ago, work is something you do, not a place you go to, but that doesn't relate to each and every vertical, right? Maybe maturity in a vertical is not the right wording to choose here, but there are lots of verticals where there's simply the mentality, even though from a technical point of view, the majority of the people is perfectly capable of doing their work remotely, but just from a mentality or a cultural fit, it doesn't really work, right? Or sometimes the style of management where it's more like I need to see my people because otherwise they don't do what I expect them to do, right? So, and I use the word maturity because I think those organizations need to mature. But then again, who am I to say, right? But it really depends on the vertical you're in and definitely the job you're in, right? I mean, working behind a machine can be challenging. Being a truck driver.
Yeah, I was just about to say it's for like an honest question, but on this call, has there ever been a time where you had a 9-to-5 job?
Yes, we did.
Okay,
no, you didn't. In a grocery store.
Yeah, Casey was there in a grocery store, so you could say
stacking the shelves.
No, I mean, I think Case, I think for our jobs. Maybe if the customer dictates it to be a 9-to-5 job, no, I don't think. In our industry, there are a lot of 9-to-5 jobs, even if it's just because after 5 o'clock, we still have a lot of things we want to do. We already established we are outspoken and we are proactive. So there are a lot of bloggers and other people just spending time after 5 o'clock. Otherwise, there's no way you can do this, achieve these things. I think so. My perspective on this is not just, let's say, the local market. What I like to see what happens is that these big vendors, Facebook, Microsoft, Google, Salesforce, whatever, they're basically saying like, hey, our product development, our company culture is not associated with the physical presence. Because previously, I know this for let's say my employer and others as well. Hey, if you want to be a product manager in this space, then you have to reallocate to this space, right? So we saw people move from either to Santa Clara, where's the headquarter. We have people in Fort Lauderdale because there's a headquarter. If you want to be in a certain area of development, then this is where you have to be. And I'm not sure which vendor it was, so I cannot really quote this, but I saw one of the bigger vendors say, okay, we're going to hire people across the U.S. This is obviously U.S. across the U.S., but we'll still pay the West Coast.
Spotify.
Spotify. So I think that's excellent because previously, depending on where you were situated, your salary was adjusted. And it makes sense, right? If you have to move, if you have to reallocate to the West Coast, that's just extremely expensive. So you need to have a higher salary. Now they're saying, you know what? I'm going to pay you the same salary regardless of where you work. And I think that's excellent, right? So if you want to work for Spotify, you don't have to reallocate to the West Coast because not everyone wants to, right? You can still be super brilliant, but if you don't want to move to the West Coast, then apparently you're not the right fit for Spotify or others. By the way, it's not just Spotify. So I think that's excellent. I think that's I hope that's going to happen more. And looking just at my own job, obviously I'm from Europe and I have a lot of coworkers in the East Coast. They are usually in the same physical building. So being in the loop, being part of a conversation, being part of work was hard because I'm not in the same physical building, right? A lot of things happen in the building. Now everyone is at home. I like it. Now I'm in the loop because I'm equal. Okay. I'm in a different time zone. But you're the same, right? Everyone is virtual.
But did you miss out before then? I mean, I do understand you're missing out on the conversation at the water cooler, right? But,
obviously, I mean, so as an example, I used to work for a company which was Swedish, let's not name what it is. I remember there where we basically had a Dutch office, we had a Swedish office and some more. If you were not in the Swedish office, they had a fika, which is their coffee. Like 10 o'clock, everyone's going to have a drink and it's a sweet thing. A lot of decisions are being made at the fika. Right. So if you're not at the coffee corner, if you're not there, business decisions will be made. So regardless, if you say like, that's not our process and we work for a global company, that's great. But if you're standing physically right next to someone, you will hear conversations. You will be part of. Absolutely. You're missing out. Is it structurally? Am I missing out? No, obviously not. I can still do my job as a remote worker. Now, if everyone is missing out, you're more equal. That was the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah. It's except a fair for point.
Time zones.
Yeah, we should go get rid of those. Let them work in the dark.
I think that's a fair statement. You know, working for an American company, I think that's a fair statement. It's very smart.
What is it that you're? What's your point? I'm over asking, or
I'll refrain from commenting on what you're what the point is and if you're over asking or not.
Yeah. Yeah,
excellent. You just had your one-on-one with your manager, right? So he knows what to do.
Yeah. so by the team work.
let's make a segue. So I would say being fully remote, everyone fully remote, it's helping with the employee experience. I don't know. So Microsoft, we have one product topic for this episode.
Yeah.
One product. The rest has been all around end user community. Let's talk about product.
Viva la Microsoft.
Last month. In length, we've been covering Microsoft, including Johan's question, if Microsoft screwed us over. Last time, we're going to talk about Johan saying that, apparently, according to Johan, you know, Microsoft screwed us over. We talked about Teams, Microsoft Teams. Now, Microsoft introduced Viva. So that's not to be confused with the Housewife magazine they sell locally. Microsoft Viva. It's an employee experience platform. So what is Viva? As you might know, I'm a technical market analyst at Citrix. So I've been closely following Microsoft and also this market around employee experience. That's why I just alluded to it. But what got announced as a new platform, it's just a well-mixed combination of existing assets into new go-to-market, which is around employee experience, employee well-being. And I think that's clever. It's timely. Yet again, these are existing assets. I think this is just very clever packaging of what they did. And honestly, a lot of the topics that they are included in Viva, they had it, but they didn't really have a purpose yet. Right? So they acquired LinkedIn, did nothing with it. Not really. There was no integration into Microsoft Product Suite. Now you see Viva Learning, and basically that's, you know, LinkedIn Learning. That's clever that there's now a connection between your work and the learning you can do within LinkedIn and also third party, which is good. I do expect LinkedIn to be at some point connected to your, let's say, corporate directory. I'm not sure if you want this, right?
I hope not.
No, this is your professional network. And then your Viva Topics. I like Viva Topics. I like Viva Topics because this was formerly known as Project Cortex. They announced it at Ignite, I think in 2019. I was still at that conference, 10,000 people. Lovely. Just being in a room with 10,000 people is just great. But it's really great, you know, the AI they use on gathering knowledge or information and making a mind map, but more a knowledge map, which is around Viva Topics. I really like that. Viva Connections is, well, honestly, it's just SharePoint. It's nothing more than a link. You click it, home. There you go, it's SharePoint. And then you have Viva Insights, which is around Microsoft Productivity.
Dude, no. It's the same with learning. Viva Learning is just the videos you could record, and they're shared in SharePoint. So it's watching videos in SharePoint.
Yeah, but it's LinkedIn Learning. I like LinkedIn Learning. They're good trainings. And now you get
so basically it's the old wine in new bags. Is that
No. I don't think so. Right? There is this component like, well, I'm not sure how evolved it is already, but there is AI in the background, right? It's more or less the same.
Dude, everything has AI in the background.
The one guy.
I think this was really confusing.
No, but it's also about providing content that you probably not would search for on the first occasion, right?
Yeah.
So, all stuff that Facebook does as well, right? So I'm not searching
for... Yeah,
so
I know.
Cat videos.
Social dilemma all over again, right?
Yeah.
You want a cat video? Yes, I think you're right. So FIFA Insights, one of the four components of Microsoft FIFA. Absolutely. I sincerely, the first time I saw it, I was like, wow, this is what I want, right? Because it solves a problem that we all have. You hear an acronym, you hear something about... So, okay, I was just trying to explain.
Collecting your information.
You hear an acronym or you hear something about, hey, Project Oakdale, which is a Microsoft product. What the fuck is Oakdale? And then it will say, okay, Oakdale. So it maps to this and this and this SharePoint site. It maps to this and this conversations. It maps to these files.
It maps to maps.
It's also a place.
Yeah.
But hasn't Google been doing that for years?
Oh, already? Yeah, no, absolutely. No. So I agree. But this is inside an organization. It's you have all the information, right? That's the problem. You have all the information. All the files are there. Now try finding it. And especially in a large enterprise and
what we should do? We should create like this AI-powered aggregator of everything EUC related.
Tell me more.
It's called EUC Digest. It was the plan.
Tell me more.
Yeah, an AI-powered website that grabs or harvests all the EUC-related news from across the internet
and
provides it in your personalized timeline.
But seriously, to me, when I first read it, I thought it was something, and I don't know if you guys know the platform, it was something like ClickUp. Then I read it again and went through it again, and then it got confusing because I read up upon this, and it was like a layer overhead of Teams. And we know what Johan talked about back in Teams. But then I read further, and then it got diffused because it's all those stuff that puts together into a workplace. And I thought, okay, so I can really start. I have my information at hand as a user and have all those learnings at hand as an end user. But that doesn't really do it. It just gives you some learnings. It gives you the connections. For a manager, it gives you the insights to be productive. To me,
I think Case is all in.
Case just is
fully
about to comment.
Zoned out.
I'm not. No, I'm not. So I was. You guys have probably seen The Social Dilemma, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
If you haven't, then watch it because it's very valuable in terms of getting a little bit of more insights on what happens on these social channels and whatnot. And I'm listening to what you guys are saying, and I'm just thinking. So this is a corporate social dilemma.
So wait. Sorry to cut you short here. So we're doing wine tips. We're doing book tips. We're doing Netflix tips.
Yeah, we would.
Yeah, I'm just a source of information right now.
Awesome.
Yes. Thank you. This is the segue we're looking for. We have some more time. We have a little. So as the listener, we have a bunch of topics that we want to cover in an episode. And then we have like just a double amount of spare topics. I don't know where we are in time, but I have one of the spare topics that I want to cover right now.
Spare bottle.
No spare bottles. I'm still good. We'll keep the wine for now. We'll keep the wine. One of the spare topics that we wanted to discuss is we're working from home. We're remote. What's the music you're listening to? How do you? I mean, right? We all
podcasts all day.
Just podcasts. I cannot work with a podcast, right? I need to focus on work. So my preference is I always listen to Spotify. Do you have another platform than Spotify?
Yep, Spotify or. No, Spotify for now.
And then, I mean,
for now,
Spotify. You're not sure yet.
No, Spotify and SoundCloud.
Yeah. So it depends. So for me, it's right. I start the day with like chill out music, like Coffee Corner, whatever they call it. Like, and then during the midpoint, I'm like, okay, I want to hear new music. Not because I'm missing out, but I want to at least hear what the new kids listen. 15 minutes later, I disconnect because I think it's just horrible. It's just. And then sometimes it depends, right? It depends on what I do. But what's the feel like? What do you listen to when you work remote?
You want to go through this per person or?
Who is it? Wherever
I'm going to hijack this first.
Johan.
I have two main things I listen. The first thing is In Spotify, I have a couple of playlists around 90s hip hop, 90s like house classics, and these, you know, I generally just listen to them while working. If I'm writing stuff, book, designs, other stuff I need to focus for a really long time, I have a playlist that Frank Denneman shared. It's called Chilled the Fuck Out. And it is a playlist which has over like 24 hours of house music, but in a similar tempo, a similar beats per minute, without any kind of vocal stuff. And it gets you into the writing zone. And I can easily like relax or easily focus for 2 to 3 hours straight without, you know, I don't know, getting distracted. It's really awesome.
Yeah, I do the same thing. So depending on kind of the purpose of the day and the timing of the day, I take a little bit more up-tempo music or take a little bit more slower music just to kind of, like Johan said, if I need to chill out a little bit more and think about things, then I'll take a little bit slower music. But if I need to crank out material, then I'll take some house music. Just to get things going. So depending on the mood and depending on kind of the purpose of the hour or hours, I pick my music.
That's funny. I mean, I mean to me, it's the same thing, right? So I start with usually the day starts slow, as in with slow music, because I have a lot of time in my perception. At the end of the day, I'm like, geez, got so much work to do. And then I refer to usually to Case playlist. What's the last one you shared with me? Old School Gangsters, which is around hard, you know, old school hardcore. I'm a big fan of like that kind of music. The later it gets, the more pressure there is, you know, and the more up-tempo, like 180 BPM music enters. One thing that I cannot do, and if there's probably a listener who's not Dutch, is the one thing that I cannot listen to is Dutch music. When they start singing, I start listening to what they're saying, and then I'm just completely distracted. So I cannot work with like the same language. However, when you're like English speaker, native, all music is English. That's got to be horrible.
No. What the biggest challenge with working out of home and being at home all the time now is that there's there are lesser opportunities, at least for me, to wind down, to completely set your mind on something different. So the stress level is...
Wind down?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So especially usually the weekly cadence or monthly cadence was broken every once in a while, where you have like maybe you go out with the family on a short holiday or over the weekend or whatsoever. Really be away from work and not thinking about work. And that's the biggest challenge today, at least for me, that even in the weekends, I'm constantly busy with my work. Whenever I after dinner and I go upstairs, it's way too easy for me just to work again. So it's got nothing to do with music. And so far I didn't, because you need to find something that distracts you from the work every once in a while, whether that's walking the dog. But well, even then, you can still be busy with your job, of course. You can do some calls or maybe listen into some podcasts. Just a tip. Maybe I'll make this an exercise for myself. I will find a nice playlist to wind down with a nice glass of wine. Thanks for the tip, Eric. And maybe music can help in this as well, right?
And while we're on the topic of nice wine winding down, and I'm not going to make the same pun again. So last month, Johan did a great review of the Alamo Chardonnay, which, by the way, I had like week after because I was doing Dry January, and I'm not a big fan of Chardonnay. I liked it. It was good. But definitely not the best white wine. So today, for those who are watching, we got a Nero Passo. And it's actually being selected by Johan. He also got a nice snack associated with it, a lot of truffles. Honestly, sorry, Johan, but most of it is
gone.
No, it's crap. But let's cover that one later. I like the red wine. I like Nero Passo. It's a nice.
Yeah,
nice,
it's an full, excellent wine. Yeah. Good choice.
Yes, definitely. Let me tell.
Are you going to get a review?
Obviously, it's a no. Obviously, it's a red wine. It's made out of three different grapes: Corvinone, Corvina, and Cabernet. And the interesting thing about this wine is that a part of the grapes are being dried before they are being used in the wine. It's called appassimento, and it's a specific method of creating wine that they also use with expensive wines like Amarone or Ripasso.
So you're saying this is a cheap wine?
No, this bottle like this, you can get it for like 11, 12 euros. And it's really, really high class wine that tastes as good as a really good Ripasso, while being a lot cheaper. And it's one of my favorite wines.
It's so funny you just said that on the Amarone. I was just drinking it while you were discussing. I was like, there are some cherry flavors in there. I get the same association when I drink that Amarone wine. It's probably a lot cheaper than Amarone, Eric. So next time, well, let's do that one because I like that too. I just feel like it's not too heavy. It's not. There are not a lot of tanninos.
It's a really friendly wine.
Send in all the good stuff, and then we will make it arranged for next episode.
You sure?
I don't know.
He doesn't know what an Amarone costs.
No. You know, okay. because of my delivery didn't got delivered. Yes, I'm on the cheap stuff for today.
It isn't a delivery until it's got delivered, right?
That's
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So everyone's got
it. It's package. He doesn't have a package.
No, I don't.
I've been cut. Yeah.
He blew up the factory.
But I like it. So my verdict is like I give it like an 8, 8.5. It's a very easy to drink red wine. It goes very well with not too heavy meat, right? It's not a very heavy red wine. I like it as an easy to drink Friday evening, sit on the couch, wine, just for normal dinner. I think it's excellent for doing a podcast. Obviously, it's great. I would not choose this wine for, I don't know, lamb or something. It's too light.
Nope.
It's not enough. But it's an easy drinkable wine. I really like it. So
you can have it with like a good steak.
Definitely.
A normal like seasoned steak. It would go well with the seasoned steak.
Yeah.
I would. Yeah, and otherwise, just drop the wine steak, and get the steak.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that was it, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's excellent.
I think that's the best review of wine I've heard in a while.
Leave it at the table and get the steak.
If it doesn't match the meat that you want to eat, then drink it later. I think that's a fair advice, right?
That's a bummer.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so then maybe next month we're going to do something else than wine, hearing this review. I think it's time to wrap up this episode of the EUC Digest Showdown. The second one already, I'm looking forward to the next one recording, where I'm sure we'll have plenty of topics to discuss. Wine to drink, maybe something else. We sincerely hope that you've enjoyed listening. Let's talk about community, technology, and whatever was on our mind, as you've noticed. If you've anything you want to add here or just want to stay in touch, reach out to us on the social channels or by email on podcast@EUCDigest. Cheers! Literally, cheers. We have a glass of wine. Cheers, and see you next month at the EUC Digest Throwdown.